Chapter 6. Demons in the Dust. Shards. Dissipative Systems. Ahriman pushed himself into the 8th enumeration as the graveyard of Tizca erupted. Beast packs of scabbed volcanic rock and molten blood exploded from below, scorched monsters with an unslaked thirst for slaughter that bled toxic fumes. A score of Thousand Sons legionaries were dragged down in the first moments of the attack. Blackened claws tore limbs from sockets, and basalt fangs split battle plate with ease. Their screams were devoured by the wind and added to its hellish chorus. Ahriman gagged on cinders, heady with transhuman meat stink. Swirling ash made it impossible to see the creatures clearly. Some were powerful quadrupeds with hooked spines and tapered lupine skulls. Others walked like men, but their eyes were reddened coals and embers smouldered between fangs of smoke. They were part beast, part man, and Ahriman saw a memory of legion form in their transhuman bulk. "What are they?" said Sanact, both swords already drawn. "The wolves," snarled Ahriman, facing down the ashen ghosts of those who had ended his world. "Come to kill us again." Ether bolts and gunshots crisscrossed the ruins of Tizca in torrents of fire. Psychic detonations blasted craters in the dust, and flocks of the glitter-skinned manta creatures circled overhead like carrion feeders. Ignis walked calmly through the carnage, following a precise path only he and his fellow masters of ruin could fathom. The sacred geometries, cut into his armor and inked on the skin beneath, were taut with the effort of reading this fight's variables. Its parameters changed swiftly, but to him, predictably. Power threaded him, racing through his flesh as each new pattern formed before him. Raptora warriors crushed ashen wolf things with kind blows stronger than thunderhammers. Pavoni adepts froze the molten heat of the demon's host forms. With their strength waxing on the tides of the great ocean, the Pyrai were masters of this battlefield. They vaporized demon wolves or suffocated the fires within them, leaving the fused statues for others to smash apart. The Athenaeans were all but powerless here. These demon wolves were avatars of hunger and death. What thoughts they had were brazen in their intent. Only the Corvidae fought with a modicum of art, even with their seer sight blunted. "Oh, so untidy," he whispered to himself, lifting his combi bolter and blasting the head from a loping ash wolf. It exploded in a welter of rock fragments and imperial fire. He watched its remains spin away in perfect parabolas. Ignis turned as a beast with a magma heart, blazing within a cage of scorched ribs, towered over him. He caught its clawed hand in his power fist as it swung at its head. He crushed the beast's limb and rammed the twin barrels of his combi bolter between its blackened ribs. Five shells carved a precise pattern through its body, breaking the demon's power to hold its form. The beast crumbled instantly to dust, and Ignis took three steps to the right. A vast spar of rusted adamantium slammed down where he had been standing, 10 meters thick and half that again in width. A blaze of warp lightning split the sky, and Ignis craned his neck as far as his armor's gorget would allow. Continental-scale thunderheads, complete with soaring cliffs of cloud, depthless valleys and sheer escarpments, bore down on the battle as every warband fought to reach the safety of their gunships. Well, not every warband. 93 Legion warriors fell back beneath the archway of the Pyramid of Fotep. Arzek Ahriman's pitiful little cabal led them, fighting to reach Amon and the Scarab occult. Others joined with Ahriman. Mamunim's and Kiyu's Raptora squads, as well as that of young Nyctius.
"So this is how it begins," mused Ignis.
Conjoined abominations of wolves and legionaries surrounded them. Flame-shot smoke geysered from the dust, demons of dust given form by Tizca's endless nightmare. They howled with incinerating breath, space wolves in armor of ash bearing axes of fused obsidian.
"Now you wear your true faces," sneered Ahriman,
his staff weaving deadly patterns of Evocatus. Vivid afterimages scorched the air as he struck each monster down. The demons aped the warriors of Fenris, but did not fight with anything approaching their cunning. Sanact gave battle at Ahriman's side, his swords cleaving ashen armor with every blow. Tolbeck laughed as he fought, reveling in his heightened powers. Ash and dust these creatures might be, but Pyrai fire seared even ash to vapor. Menkaura and Hathor Mart fought back to back, an unlikely pairing, but effective. Spars of light and shadow swayed across the shattered ruins within the Pyramid of Fotep, dunes of rubble and steel, lakes of broken glass and scraps of burning pages spinning in vortices of flame. Scattered bands of Thousand Suns legionaries fought beneath the pyramid's rusted spars in diminishing mandalas. Ahriman saw the warriors of Mamunim and Silent Kiu, Nyctius and Ignis. "Too few. We should not have entered the pyramid," said Sanact, his jackal sword aflame with killing light. "We are cut off from the Thunderhawk." Ahriman swayed aside from a tearing strike that sparked from his pauldron. A fist of kind power shattered the crude wolf's head, and the demonic animus shrieked as it died. In the flames of its doom, Ahriman tasted insight.
"The gunship is not our way out," he said.
"No? Then what is?" demanded Hathor Mart, burn scars on his face already healing.
"They are," said Ahriman.
Ether fire blazed from the bladed pole arms of the Scarab occult terminators. With Ammon at their head, they fought in a wedge towards a mound of heaped rubble directly beneath the great pyramid's apex. The Primarch's equerry bore his bladed staff in one hand, a fluted plasma pistol in the other. His every movement was balletic, every killing strike made in the sure and certain knowledge of its lethality.
"Your seer sight is not so blunted," whispered Ahriman.
"What are they doing?" said Hathor Mart, as the Terminators formed a defensive circle around Ammon, like pagan warriors in a tribal shield wall.
"No," whispered Ahriman, "do not make us live this again."
"What do you mean?"
demanded Tolbeck.
"Live what again?"
Before Ahriman could answer, a deafening roar split the air. Its power shook the upper reaches of the gutted pyramid, and the demonic space wolves paused in their assault. As one, they threw back their heads to loose an answering howl. The arched entrance to the Pyramid of Fotep exploded as a towering monster smashed its way inside. Taller than a knight warrior of the Mechanicum, its body smoked as though fresh struck in a forge. Armor, once frost grey, was now black as pitch and hung with skulls, lit from within by a molten heart. A titanic wolf king and murderous executioner. Tizca's ghosts remembered Layman Russ all too well. Though he and Magnus had planned for this, Ammon's heart sank at the sight of the demonic wolf king. Standing atop the rubble at the geomantic heart of the pyramid, his flesh sang with the effort of reciting the dizzying formulae of Invocatus Magnus had shown him. Baying demons of dust surrounded the beleaguered Thousand Suns, borrowing likenesses they did not comprehend. Ammon hated them almost as much as the warriors whose form they stole. They hurled themselves at the Scarab occult, but the mandala was unbreakable, a ring of blades and ether fire. Ammon was not surprised to see Ahriman and his cabal fighting within the pyramid. The fate of the wayward chief librarian had always been entwined with that of the Primarch. The Ashen Wolf King charged through the Thousand Suns, its blade of cinders and night sweeping before it in flaming arcs, the immaterium made solid. Battleplate was useless before it, and no kind shield could resist its power. Thousand Suns were smashed aside like children, no match for the demon's monstrous form. It howled as it slew, ether powers dissipating against its blazing flanks. With every step it took, its smouldering face grew ever more bestial, losing all semblance of humanity.
"Rally to me, sons of Magnus!"
shouted Ammon, feeling the last locks of the Invocator snap open. Power flowed through his veins in a river of dark elixir, burning like phosphex yet colder than lignite. Ammon slammed his Hecastaff down on the altar of debris. The ground exploded beneath him, and incandescent spears of light pierced his body. Ammon screamed as unimaginable power filled him, the power of fire and pain. And,
At its heart were eyes. The Primarch's endless eyes. He could not move. The light pinned him in place. He heard Magnus in his head, asking the question he had posed at their first meeting in the Rose City of the Nabateans.
Will you die for me, my friend?
Ammon gave the same answer he had given all those years ago. Willingly. For one last fleeting moment, he was simply Ammon, a warrior, a faithful son. The next, he was a vessel of the Crimson King. Ahriman saw Ammon burning in the fire of the great ocean, swelling, growing, and bloating as unimaginable power filled him. The equerry's form was lost as another mightier form was birthed like a new star. It exploded into the air, angelic and terrible. Deepest gold and vivid red, its beautiful face bore a single eye and a shock of wild hair.
Magnus, breathed Ahriman.
This was the Primarch at his zenith, the Crimson King in all his glory. From a time when all the Imperium had venerated his exalted name and deeds, an exemplar to humans and transhumans alike. Light blazed from Magnus, and where it struck the demon wolves, it burned them like images scorched from Pictar emulsion. From dust they had come, and to dust they returned, howling in frustration and pain. The burning effigy of Layman Russ saw its once and future nemesis, and the pyramid shook with its primal fury. Ahriman's body burned with remembrance of this battle, grief and guilt stabbing with blades sharper than any forged by Vulcan's sons. He felt the ice of the Black Rain, the horror of the wolves that were not wolves unleashed by Russ. The avatars of Magnus and Russ threw themselves at one another, one a being of polluted ash and dust, the other an angel of illumination. The seismic impact hurled every warrior to the ground and sent a thunderous shockwave through the ruined pyramid. Vast girders moaned as its structural lattice buckled all along its height. Meters-thick bolts and welded supports broke loose to fall in a lethal steel rain. Ahriman rolled as a girder punched through the ground like a spear thrown by an angry god. He threw out a kine shield. Thunderous impacts flared. Falling steelwork ricocheted to either side. Repercussive agonies numbed his arm and sent arcing pain through his skull. He looked up to see the pyramid structure sway and bend, unbreakable beams snapping like kindling. Its collapse was now a certainty.
"We have to get out of here!"
cried Sanakht, his mind shouting the words as he channeled kine power through his blades to deflect falling debris.
"No!"
returned Ahriman over the deafening roar of splitting steel and the violence of the battling Primarchs.
"The whole damn place is coming down!"
yelled Tolbeck, the air above him hazed with plasmic heat that turned every piece of falling steel instantly to vapour.
"This is why we are here,"
said Ahriman, hating that this was the real reason the Thousand Sons had been summoned to Tiska. Not to hear Ammon's grim pronouncement, but to bear witness to their greatest shame, to learn how to make their sire whole again. The sword of Layman Russ clove Magnus's side, and star-bright radiance blazed from the wound. In return, Magnus plunged his fist into Russ's chest. Volcanic heat bloomed, and the Wolf King's bellow was one of abject torment. They flew upwards, tens of meters, then hundreds. Like beasts they tore at one another, entwined in swirling loops of burning dust and radiant veils of light. It became impossible to separate the combatants, individual forms lost in the hurricane of light and dark. Booming impacts and forking blasts of lightning sheared from the seething battle. Ahriman pushed himself to his feet, ether power pulsing from his fingers. He resisted the urge to wield it, sensing how immeasurably dangerous that would be.
"All of you!"
he shouted.
"The first enumeration only!"
Hathor Mard staggered over to him, the side of his face puckered and bleeding with fresh burn scars. Pink skin was already reforming over the wet redness.
"No," said Ahriman. "No powers. Not now."
"You want me to scar?"
"I need you to live,"
snapped Ahriman, his eyes focused on the battle raging half a kilometre overhead.
"The psychic pressure in here is immense, like fumes from a Promethean well just waiting on a spark. Do you really want to be that spark?"
Azek is correct, said Ignis, marching through the dust without so much as a scratch on the hulking plates of his Terminator armor. Every signifier tells me it would be most unwise to employ raptures at this time.
Ahriman looked beyond the psychic hurricane as the avatars of the Primarchs fought to the death. Critical elements of the pyramid's steelwork were being drawn into their battle, twisting an already weakened structure to the point of imminent collapse.
Ignis, said Ahriman, what do you know?
Only that we cannot leave when the potentials within the numerological auspices are so uncertain, said the Master of Ruin. The question is, what do you know?
What are you talking about?
Truly? You don't feel it?
Said Ignis, genuinely surprised.
Feel what? Demanded Ahriman. I have no time for your riddles, Ignis.
True. As the pyramid is going to collapse in precisely 73.6 seconds, but that is largely irrelevant,
said Ignis, pointing to Ahriman's belt with the barrel of his combi bolter.
I was referring to your recent acquisition.
Ahriman looked down in disbelief. Chained at his waist and sealed with golden locks was a tome heavy with lore and mighty with secret knowledge. Its cover was burgundy with a subtle crimson hue, the spine edged in worn copper and flaked gold.
The Book of Magnus, said Ahriman,
pressing a hand to the soft leather of its bindings. He had last seen this volume when Magnus ordered he return it to the Obsidian Tower. Just being close to it imbued him with clarity of insight he had forgotten was possible. The surviving Thousand Sons, bloody after the battle with the Aether Wolves, gathered around him, Line Warriors and Scarab Occult both. With Amon gone and Ahriman in possession of the Primarch's grimoire, they looked to him for guidance.
I know now why we are here, he said.
Why?
Asked Hathormat.
Ahriman looked up as the base of the pyramid flooded with light.
Not to witness the death of Magnus, but what came after?
The Primarchs were falling like warring angels, with no more strength to remain aloft. The fire and dust was gone, stripped from them by god-smiting blows and revealing the terrible hurts they had suffered. Magnus bled light from a dozen mortal wounds, his radiance stained with the foreknowledge of his imminent demise. Yet the dark Russ fared little better, its substance split apart to reveal the sick core of demonic energies boiling within. The Primarchs crashed to earth, where Amon had brought forth the Crimson King from his own flesh. The impact shook the entire pyramid and raised a mushroom cloud of dust and debris. Ahriman felt the shockwave of their war batter his mind's defences. Blood ran from his nose and ears. The benighted Wolf King was the first to rise. All pretense at imitating Layman Russ was forsaken, for this was a broken thing of demonic fury. It reached down and plucked Magnus from the ruins, blackened claws tearing the meat of Magnus's neck as it raised him high. Ahriman knew what must come next, and raised a warning hand as the warriors of the Scarab Occult set their blades for a charge. He felt the build-up of ether power in every warrior.
No!
he cried.
This is not a second chance to save him!
He threw his arms out and froze the link to the great ocean in every warrior. They fell to their knees, wailing in frustration at their newfound powerlessness. Ahriman roared as their etherlight filled him, and the Book of Magnus thrummed as it drank in the desperation of the Thousand Sons. Ahriman's eyes blazed, his seer sight slamming through him and opening every one of his senses to the infinite scope of time. Innumerable histories yet to be written poured through him in a rush of incomprehensible imagery. Legacies of betrayal and hope, eternities of war and suffering, the birth of all things, and the ultimate doom of the universe. The Rust Thing hauled Magnus over its head. The Crimson King was helpless in its grip. The moment stretched, and as Ahriman looked deep into Magnus's eye, he saw acceptance.
Find me. Restore me.
Russ slammed Magnus down across his knee.
When Ahriman had first seen Magnus die, it had been a barely glimpsed horror, a pain that cut deep but mercifully quickly. Not so this time. Magnus's back bent further than even a Primarch's could survive.
Ahriman saw, rather than heard, his father's spine break, all natural elasticity suddenly absent as the two halves of his body folded into one another. Though he knew this was not truly his genesire, he still screamed with grief and anger. The body of the Crimson King shattered like a priceless statue cast down by unthinking savages. Blinding light blazed from its ruination. The very heart of Magnus was revealed, a crystalline lattice of impossibly complex geometric arrangements, wheeling kaleidoscopes of unblinking eyes, churning wheels and spirals of power woven together so densely that they were all but indivisible. The moment became Magnus's death and apotheosis in one. His soul was broken into spinning shards of glass. Ahriman heard the Wolf King's thwarted howl as his quarry escaped, ignorantly unaware of just how mortal a blow he had struck. Ahriman's mind followed the thousands of shards as they tumbled away from their center of spiritual gravity. Following the alchemical truth of like attracts like, the vast majority remained bound to the will of the Crimson King and were reforged atop the obsidian tower. But five hurtled far from their wellspring. Ahriman watched them spin away from Magnus's broken form, carried beyond Prospero by dark design. He followed the shards until they vanished into the surging tides of the great ocean, imprinting the fleeting impressions they left in his mind. The forgotten library of a wandering king, its shelves groaning under the weight of 10,000 tomes inscribed in the Phoenician Grammata, an inhuman jail, ether-hostile and cold, a place unknown to him, but awash with pain and guilt, and a singular hatred. A god amongst mountains, hungry for souls and once guarded by titanic angels. A place of judgment and betrayal. And lastly, a shining world at the heart of everything, once golden with great purpose, now fading as its dream died. Even as Ahriman lost sight of the five shards, he sensed purpose in their scattering, deep resonances to be unravelled and meanings to divine.
"I will find you," he swore, "and I will restore you."
No sooner had Ahriman made his vow than the stretched moment of Magnus's breaking ended. Sound and pressure roared over him as cascading steelwork and glass crashed down like artillery strikes. He blinked away the images of frozen soul shards spinning through space and time. A voice shouted in his mind.
"Azek, you need to go now!"
Who was speaking? His mind was sluggish, denied the swiftness of thought afforded within the great ocean.
"Ignis?"
"Indeed,"
said the Master of Ruin.
"By my reckoning, you have 36 seconds before you are buried under many thousands of tons of steel."
"Where are you?"
"Already outside," replied Ignis. "Where you must be in 27 seconds if you plan on living."
Ahriman nodded, still adjusting to the realignment of his senses. Both Russ and Magnus were gone, but the fury of their battle had destroyed what little structural integrity remained in the Pyramid of Fotep. The warriors who had followed him into the pyramid were already moving to safety. Menkaure led them, using his limited seer sight to plot a course through the tumbling debris. Sanact carried a wounded warrior, and Ahriman was never more thankful the swordsman had sworn an oath of loyalty to him. Ignis was already beyond, and Mamunim, Caillou, and Nyctius forged a route from the pyramid, faltering kind shields keeping the worst of the barrage at bay. Only the scarab occult remained at Ahriman's side, and it took Ahriman a moment to understand why.
"Ahriman,"
he said, seeing the broken body of the Primarch's equerry lying atop the heaped rubble at the pyramid's centre.
"Go,"
he ordered the Terminators. But not a single warrior stepped away. Together they crashed through the falling rubble towards Ahriman, knowing they could not possibly escape before the pyramid collapsed. Every warrior of the Scarab occult had attained the rank of Philosophus, and but for their kind powers, Ahriman knew he would be dead already. He scrambled up a slope of vitrified stone and dust. Ahriman's body lay at a sickeningly unnatural angle, his back clearly broken.
the price he had paid for hosting the Primarch's Echo.
"Oh, you damn fool," he said,
knowing he would have done the same had the task been given to him. He lifted Ammon from the rubble, and fused plates of broken armor crumbled from his body. Ahriman heard splintered spinal bones grate beneath the equerry's battered, putty-like flesh. Ammon grunted in agony, his eyelids flickering. The roar of falling steelwork surged in volume. Ahriman looked up in time to see the remains of the pyramid of Fotep's upper reaches crashing down in a tsunami of steel. The scarab occult formed a circle around Ahriman and Ammon, but there could be no escape and no survival.
"You are a damn fool," groaned Ammon. "You always were."
Ahriman closed his eyes and bellowed in frustration. But death did not come. He lifted his head to see a ceiling of shivering steel hovering a meter above him in defiance of this world's arbitrary gravity.
"How are we still alive?" said Ahriman.
He looked to the Terminators, but not even the Scarab occult possessed artes potent enough to save them. Their auras showed as much surprise as his.
"Ammon, is this you?"
he asked. Ammon shook his head, his teeth grinding in pain.
"This is not Ammon's doing,"
said a melodic voice that echoed inside Ahriman's skull, as though twins spoke as one.
"It is mine."
Ahriman turned to see one of the yokai automata standing with its slender arms upraised. Every portion of its sculpted body was etched in spiraling symbols of Invocatus and Diabolus, like an Uikut tribesman bearing his Taumoko markings.
"Oh, no," he said. "We purged the Tartaruki's automata of their inhabiting warp entities."
"You did indeed," replied the yokai. "This body is new and cold, but it is very suited to me."
"I will destroy you,"
promised Ahriman, pushing his mind into the aggressive enumerations.
"Whatever you are."
The yokai took a step back, still with its arms raised.
"You would go against your Primarch's will?"
"What do you mean?"
demanded Ahriman, as a terrible suspicion began to form.
"What are you?"
The yokai chuckled.
"You don't recognize me, Azek. I'm hurt, and more than a little disappointed."
"You are the Iron Oculus," said Ahriman,
horrified the Torquatum Seer was free of its sarcophagus prison.
"I am a Forgomon," said the yokai, "gifted with a new form and blessed with new purpose."
"What purpose do you think you have?"
"The same as yours, Azek," said the demon. "I intend to save Magnus the Red."
Ammon watched the Kemet rise into the storm from the apex of his pyramid. He watched until the clouds swallowed the starship, then willed the floating support throne back inside his workshop. The golden structure of his mechanical prison was perfectly shaped to his broken body, and a psychic hood rising over the back of his skull allowed him control of its every function. Ammon's back was destroyed. The dust demon of the Wolf King had shattered his bones like glass from the cervical vertebrae to the lumbar. But for the galaxy having been turned on its axis by treachery, Ammon knew he would now be dead or interred within a dreadnought sarcophagus. Magnus awaited him, studying a diagram of planetary motion overlaid with the best tidal predictions the Corvidae could manage. He looked up as Ammon entered, his face creased in the thin smile of one who bears the guilt for another's suffering.
"Are you in pain, my son?" asked Magnus.
"My spine is in fragments," pointed out Ammon. "I cannot feel anything at all below the neck."
"I wasn't referring to bodily pain," said Magnus with genuine remorse. "When you bore my spirit, you felt what I felt when Russ broke me. You felt my loss, my guilt. You felt everything."
"And I would do it again in a heartbeat, my lord."
Magnus nodded. "I know you would. Which is why you will always be my most loyal son, Ammon. But the agonies of the flesh will return. Are you prepared for that?"
"I am. But Hathormat has assured me his Pavoni adepts can keep the worst of it at bay while they re-sculpt my bones."
"Hathormat has left with Azek and his cabal.
Ammon tried to nod, then remembered he could not.
Yes, he said. They are all gone.
The tides are auspicious, said Magnus,
tapping the chart before him. It bodes well for their quest.
I should be with them.
No, said Magnus. I need you here. We have a great deal of work before us.
What help can I be, my lord?
Asked Ammon, manoeuvring his throne to a position before a workbench strewn with cracked lens glass, pewter frames, and piles of sanding cloths.
My body is crippled, and what power I have left recedes with the tides of the great ocean.
It vexes you that your fellowship declines, said Magnus. But it will rise again, sooner than you know.
When?
Magnus did not answer, and moved to another table, upon which sat the delicate mechanism of an antikythera, a combination of divinatory telescope, armillary sphere, and immaterial barometer.
My brother once crafted me such a device, said Magnus, turning the screw attached to the central plates to move the lenses and align the ether sights. Crafted on a world that weathered old night, but was lost to the same madness nonetheless.
I remember you telling me of the piece, said Ammon. A beautiful artifact. Exquisite. Unique, even. And now lost forever.
Lost? Yes, I suppose that's one way of putting it, said Magnus, turning the screw again to increase the tension in the concealed springs within the device.
I was remaking it for you, but it did not survive the journey to this place, said Ammon. The lenses are distorted now and the plates are misaligned. You won't see anything.
You don't know what I'm looking for.
Magnus peered down the lenses and unlatched the pin, securing the antikythera's moving parts. The springs released their pent-up energy, and the allegorical aspects of the celestial vault engraved on the bronze plates spun freely.
Tell me, Ammon, do you understand what is meant in mechanics by a dissipative system?
No, my lord. I was never meant for a life in the forge.
Magnus grinned, keeping his eye to the viewing lens.
Indeed. Well, a tech marine would tell you that a dissipative system is one that loses energy to friction. He would also tell you that most of these systems suffer loss gradually, in a manner that is entirely predictable. But there are other dissipative systems that do not follow this pattern. They are chaotic and untidy. For a while they lose energy steadily, then suddenly, only to then regain their predictable rate of loss without apparent rhyme or reason.
I'm not sure I understand your meaning here, my lord.
If you consider life as a chaotic dissipative system, you will understand what I mean, said Magnus. Can you guess the most dissipative system anyone has ever or will ever encounter?
No, my lord.
It is war, Ammon, said Magnus.
War is violently uneven and wholly unpredictable. Its course can rarely be divined, even by the greatest seers, and even they will oft-times be taken completely unawares, as we now know to our cost. Magnus placed the antikythera back on the bench, apparently satisfied by what he had seen.
The conflict between Horus and the Emperor is war on a scale not known since the earliest epochs of the galaxy. It is the greatest chaotic dissipative system I have ever seen.
Why are you telling me this, my lord?
Because I cannot see how it will end, said Magnus. And what cannot be avoided must be welcomed.